Hard Place, a novel by R.A. Jacobson. Listener discretion is advised. Contains strong language, violence, and some adult situations.
Chapter 22. And the Dog Knew It. He reached out to grasp the neck of the guitar when, with a grunt and a deep wet cough, the man behind the counter stood up and looked at John with red-rimmed, half-shut eyes. Taller than John had imagined and lean to the point of skeletal, he swayed slightly, then turned and shuffled off, muttering curses. John watched him, his hand still hovering near the guitar, as the man disappeared behind a thin, dirty curtain into the back room. For a second, he stared at the curtain. Then, with a start, he looked down to see the dog sitting in front of him, regarding him with unnerving eyes. John stared back at the dog and felt it could read him, could read his thoughts, plumb the depths, right to his dreams, his soul. He considered John, and John felt embarrassed. He felt a rush of scarlet shame. He had had a dream and had let it go. And the dog knew it.
Chapter 23. Mr. December and Mr. August meet. In a darkened alley, in a distant part of the city, two men stood face to face. Both were tall and thin, both sheathed in dark suits with crisp white shirts, black western ties, and broad-brimmed fedoras. They smiled huge and broad at each other. "Mr. December, there are many abnormalities in these contracts," Mr. August said, smiling. "Yes, Mr. August. It appears there is a skin still active."
"Still active?"
"Yes, Mr. August. Still active after nearly a week." "That's not possible, Mr. December. No skin can survive past 3 days. They burn up when the skin stops protecting them." "Mr. August, I agree it's not possible. However, it is here. There's no question. It is still active on this plane. Mr. December, does head office know?" "As of this morning, no, Mr. August, but when they do, there will be questions." "Yes, Mr. December, many questions."
Chapter 24. Take It. "Take it." From somewhere the words came to him. "Why don't you take it?" John looked at the dog. It continued to look back, one eye white and milky, the other deep and dark. "It's yours, anyways. It was promised to you long ago." "Why don't you just take it?" John frowned and looked at the dog. The dog looked back.
Chapter 25. Jacob Talks with the Judge. It had been years since Jacob had seen the judge, not since he was 17. He had regrets from that time, the biggest being that he tried and failed to kill the judge. It was obvious the judge didn't get out, nor encouraged visitors. After some searching, Jacob found the entrance to the overgrown two-wheel track that twisted through a dense strip of trees. It was rough, riddled with potholes. High, dry grass and weeds had grown up through the gravel. The track broke from the trees, revealing a massive automotive graveyard. It meandered through the maze of wrecked cars, many piled two or even three deep. A few were fairly new, still shiny, and others were old, going back to the 40s, rusted hulks that looked as though they were returning to the earth. Jacob bounced along on his bike, going slow, on the lookout for glass and shards of jagged metal that could ruin his tires. At the end of the path loomed a big old oak tree adorned with dozens of deer skulls in various states of decay. Some were fresh, wet, and glistening, others dry and bleached. The oak tree towered above a small, dinted green and white trailer. A chrome strip hung loose, tapping on the trailer's side in the light breeze. One of the small, grimy windows was busted, revealing tattered, stained curtains. It was an unimpressive place to find the devil, but this was the judge's home for as long as Jacob could remember. He killed the engine, rocked the bike over, and walked to the trailer where two small children were playing in the dirt. They stood and smiled as he approached.
"Hi, Jacob."
"I don't think the judge will see you," the boy spoke. They were twins, mere images of each other.
"Not without Clyde," said the girl standing behind her brother.
"I don't give a fuck what you say. I'm here to talk with him, and I'm gonna."
The twins always creeped Jacob out, putting him on edge. Some time back, he had glimpsed them through Clyde's windshield, and what he had seen was unspeakable, a horrific vision that still haunted his nightmares. He didn't understand what they truly were. No matter what they appeared to be, they certainly were not children. The not knowing and the fear they elicited brought out his anger.
"Don't be difficult, Jacob. It won't end well."
"You have yet to see our true faces," they said in unison.
"Look, you little shits, I don't care about your true face. I have more than a few questions, like why are skins walking around now after all these years?"
Jacob felt a sense of panic rising inside him. He wasn't sure why, but he didn't want to see their real faces.
"Skins.
I'm sure you're mistaken," they began stepping forward when the trailer door opened with a metallic bang. A tall, thin man in a fine black suit stepped down with a big smile and open arms. The judge hadn't changed since that long-ago night when Jacob first met him.
"Skins, you say? Well, Jacob, come in. Let's see what's going on."
He turned and stepped back into the dark of the trailer. Grabbing the chrome handle, Jacob pulled himself up. The trailer rocked slightly as it took his weight. Inside, the little light that seeped past the edges of the drawn curtains showed a beaten-down space like so many Jacob had been in. This one felt abandoned. It smelled of rot and mildew. A layer of dust coated every surface. The judge strode down the hallway, past the little bathroom, to where a bedroom should have been. Jacob followed, his shoulders nearly touching both walls. With a plastic rattle, the judge pushed the brown accordion door aside and stepped into the dark beyond. Jacob entered the massive wood-paneled office that was, impossibly, there. He scanned the enormous room, far larger than his entire house, lavish furniture scattered about, massive glass-covered bookcases filled with leather-bound books. On the walls hung ancient weapons and dark, monstrous sculptures menaced from the corners. Everything in the room was heavy, dark, and rich, and none of it should have existed. The judge walked across the room to a heavily carved wooden desk.
"So, Jacob, what's this talk about skins?"
Leather creaked as he sat in his commanding and opulent chair.
"Yeah, one came to the farm wearing Billy," Jacob said.
The judge leaned back and smiled like the predator he was.
"Billy? Really? Why do you suppose he was wearing Billy?"
Jacob looked at the judge sitting with his hands steepled in front of him and his feet extended, resting on the edge of the desk. An image of a large black spider flashed in Jacob's mind. He took a deep breath and attempted to push the rising panic down and said,
"How the fuck should I know? You're the judge."
"Yes, yes, but why Billy? What do you think Billy was up to?"
asked the judge.
"I don't know. The skin was talking some shit about my contract being up and Clyde being for sale."
Jacob's head lowered as he looked around. He felt trapped. His back tightened. His hands curled.
"Clyde? Where's Clyde? Why isn't he with you?"
The judge was so calm.
"I left him at home," Jacob said, wishing he was at home as well.
"Yes, you really never got into the spirit of it all."
His smile broadened. Inside Jacob's head, he heard Clyde. "Something's not right here. He's the judge. He should be able to hear me."
Judge, what the hell's going on? Jacob asked. The judge stood and walked around the desk, still smiling. Nothing. Just some contracts are being rescinded. Some haven't been keeping up their clauses. But Jacob, you are fine. You and Clyde are fine. Say, when was the last time you saw Billy?
What?
Unaware of Jacob's distress, the judge asked, when was the last time you saw him?
I don't know. Maybe a week ago?
When he picked up last week's run.
Did you talk? Did he mention anything unusual? Did he mention anything about silver coins?
Jacob, get the hell out of there. This isn't right. Jacob could hear the strain in Clyde's words.
What?
No, he never did.
What's this all about? What silver coins? What the hell is going on?
Oh, nothing. Now I really must be getting back to my day. Thanks for stopping by.
It's always a pleasure. Next time, please bring Clyde with you. It's been so long since I've seen him.
The judge stood, coming around the desk, and gestured Jacob to the door.
Yeah, I gotta go too.
Everything about this fucking man and this fucking room was wrong, just wrong. This had been a mistake. Jacob knew he would learn nothing from this twisted creature. He stumbled down the steps into the air and the weak sun as the judge closed the door behind him. The twins stood together and grinned, enjoying his distress. Jacob was shaken. He had to get to his bike, get the wind in his face.
Bye, Jacob. Come back anytime, they chimed.
Ignoring the twins, ignoring the panic rising in his throat, Jacob forced himself to walk, not run, to his bike.
We'd love to show you our true faces.
Yeah, real soon, Jacob called over his shoulder as he kicked the bike into life. Frustrated, eager to be gone, he picked his way back along the twisting path through the graveyard.
When he finally made it past the trees, his back tire yelped as it clawed in the blacktop. The knucklehead thundered under him. Its bark echoed off the trunks of the forest that lined the highway. He leaned forward, squinting into the wind, and pulled hard on the throttle, concentrating on putting as much distance as he could between himself and the judge.
Chapter 26, A Mad Impulse. Suddenly a mad impulse. Hardly believing himself capable of such a thing, he grabbed the guitar, turned, and ran out of the shop. The old man returned past the curtain in time to see John as he raced frantically out the door. The bell rang as the door slammed behind him. Did he wave at John as he passed the window? John wasn't sure. The man sat down on a stool, muttered, chuckled, spat, and shut his eyes again. The dog, still sitting on the floor, got up and walked back to the old man, where it took position, curled up, and went to sleep. Sweating and panting, John burst into his apartment. His heart raced as he ran to the window and looked down to the street, fully expecting to see cop cars screeching to a stop in front of his building, coming to arrest the thief he was. But the street was quiet. And after a few long moments, he relaxed. It was then he realized he still clutched his prize. It felt hot.
Chapter 27. Matt meets Alan in an alley. The alley behind the Aturian Lounge was dark. The single bulb hung over an old beaten metal door set in a dirty brick wall made the dark seem deeper, more impenetrable. It swung in a breeze below a large, dinted shade and cast constantly changing shadows down the length of the alley. The shifting light made the graffiti dance as if alive, made the garbage bins morph as the shadows played over their surfaces, turning them from ordinary to sinister. At the other end, past the old brick building, was the Aturian. The streetlights dimly lit the opening of the alley. Matt, Constable Kowalski, and two police officers stood off in a corner out of sight.
Mr. Pierce, we've got three officers in the west end of the alley.
and two with us, Constable Kowalski said. I'm still not sure what's going on. Matt couldn't shake the feeling he was betraying Alan somehow. It wasn't logical, but it felt wrong. Who was telling him the truth? This aggressive cop, or the man he thought of as Alan on the phone? Don't worry, just keep him distracted, we'll do the rest. Matt grunted and walked down the alley. The weak streetlight pushed a long shadow in front of him. He squinted, trying to pierce the dark, to see past the single light that created silhouetted shapes rimmed with fine lines of light that seemed to move with malicious intent. If there was anyone in front of him, he couldn't see them. Not the cops he was told were there, and not Alan. He walked forward slowly, moving as carefully as he could, his shoes making far more noise than he wanted. Alan? I'm here, Alan. Ahead of him, something moved, making him jump. A shadow separated itself from the wall and spoke. Hey, Matt! How have you been? The dark shape sounded and moved like Alan. Matt strained to see the face, to see his boss, hoping there was a simple explanation for all this strangeness, simply some case Alan was working on that would make sense of it all. What is going on? Fuck, no one is telling me shit. You disappear for a week? Yeah, it's been a different kind of week. I need you to do me a favor. I need you to talk to Mary Lou, the singer in the lounge. I need you to tell her something. Somewhere in the dark, a noise, a scuff of a boot, perhaps. Wait! You didn't come alone? I didn't know who I was meeting. Still don't. They showed me a skinned body and told me it was you. Oh, Matt. Things have gotten kind of weird. It's me. Sort of. Sort of? Another noise off to the right, deeper in the shadows, made Alan spin and drop into a crouch. Matt flinched back as he watched Alan. His movement seemed alien, animal-like, and fractured, as if he was trying to move in several directions at once. I'll call you later and try to explain. Alan's eyes rolled white. They were crazed and wild. His nostrils flared wide in panic. This was barely human, somehow more creature than man. This was not Alan, at least not the man Matt knew. Alan growled, bent low, and loped toward the alley's end. As he did, three cops jumped from the shadows, reaching for him. Alan hardly paused as he rammed through them, flinging them backwards. They slammed into the walls and crumpled to the ground. From the other alley, there was a loud pistol crack. Alan staggered and fell. Gripping his arm, he stumbled to his feet, surrounded by what looked like black smoke. With a snarl, white teeth showing bright, he vanished into the dark. As Matt stared after him, the constable ran past, arm extended, holding a Sig Sauer. Where is he? She said, panting. I think I hit him. I don't know, I... Matt didn't know what had happened, but he was pretty damn sure he had not been talking to Alan. Fuck! Constable Kowalski said as she shoved the Sig in her holster on her hip. Her eyes glared at Matt as if he had let Alan get away. She pushed roughly past him and walked down the alley to check on her injured officers. Matt stood, mulling over what he'd witnessed. He felt overwhelmed, certainly out of his depth. Between the texts and the phone call and now this meeting, all of it had an edge of the bizarre, an almost otherworldly feel. The corpse on the metal table with its wide-open, unseeing eyes flashed in his mind. Matt started. Constable Kowalski was standing beside him. Well, that sure the fuck didn't go as I hoped. No, Matt said, coming back from where his thoughts had taken him. He could hear the ambulance's siren howling into the night. Two of my officers are now in the hospital, and we still don't know who that was, or who had killed and skinned Mr. Cole. She looked hard at Matt. Go home. I'll contact you if I need any more information. She strode away from him, boots loud on the concrete, leaving him standing alone. Stories from a Hard Place is a narrative podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, R.A. Jacobson presents another chapter from Hard Place, read by the author. Opening music by Noah Zacharin. Production copyright by R.A. Jacobson, 2022. If you'd like to support Stories from a Hard Place, please go to patreon.com/hardplace. If you would like a book version, either ebook or print, you can find it anywhere books are sold, including your local library. You can find links to all these and much more at Dead Cat Studio. That's deadcatstud.io. Thanks for listening. Keep the shiny side up.